The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
Hey guys, I have more bad news. According to the airline, Haddad has a checked bag on the flight. FBI needs you to locate and search it.
Great. And if we find something?
In the event there's an explosive device, the bomb squad will talk you through it.
You're making a mistake. I have rights.
Welcome everyone. It is Wednesday, September 10, 2025. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right wing, it's just right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Appealing for justice on the grounds that you have rights is a perfect reason for doing so. But what about those who are appealing for injustice on the grounds that they have rights? Seen by over 2 million viewers within 48 hours of its August 31st release, Patrick Bet-David's Jubilee production entitled One Capitalist vs. 20 Anti-Capitalists provided 20 exhibits of precisely such people. People who demand injustice as the means to establish their utterly evil utopias, which they see as being something good, of course. Coming from those on the right, numerous reactions to the debate expressed utter amazement and disbelief that, well, to put it bluntly, this group of anti-capitalists could be so detached from reality and so selfish, greedy, and otherwise completely ignorant of even the most simple principles of life. But yet again, these defenders of capitalism dropped the ball in terms of properly and effectively defending capitalism itself and in terms of condemning all non-capitalist systems. So once again, that task has fallen to us as we shall straighten out all of the crooked and misguided thinking surrounding capitalism right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible.
My first claim is incentive is the engine of capitalism. Remove it and the system fails. My next claim is capitalism has lifted more people out of poverty than any other system. My next claim is if all the money in the world were divided equally, it would return to the same pockets within 5 years. My final claim is the U.S. is more socialist than capitalist today. If you hate the system, you're anti-socialist. I'm Patrick Bet-David. I'm an entrepreneur and founder of PBD Podcast. Today, I'm surrounded by 20 anti-capitalists.
Only 2 weeks ago, our entire August 27th broadcast was all about capitalism and its greatest defender, Ayn Rand. So how coincidental that Patrick Bet-David's own production on defending capitalism should have been released a few days later on August 31st. And how predictable that Ayn Rand was nowhere mentioned in the latter, attesting to a very serious problem facing those who say that they support capitalism. It's a problem that does not emanate from capitalism's declared enemies, but from its defenders. And in this context, I have to say that the epistemological carnage within which the Jubilee debate special was discussed was mind-boggling. Nowhere was there an objective definition of capitalism or of any of the other isms around which the whole debate revolved. If you haven't seen or heard the debate yet, spoiler alert, a perfect description of the event and its outcome appeared in the introductory pages of Ayn Rand's book, Capitalism, The Unknown Ideal, published way back in November 1967. And thanks to Patrick Bet-David, it's clear that nothing has changed since then. When Ayn Rand compiled that book, she made a point of saying that it was not her intention in any way to promote or sell capitalism to anybody. Her purpose was merely to define it. Once people understood what capitalism was, she concluded, why would they possibly choose any other economic system? But more than that, The book was also a harsh criticism directed at capitalism's defenders, a criticism that I think fully applied to the PBD debate. And here's what she wrote in the introduction to Capitalism, The Unknown Ideal. Quote, "This book is not a treatise on economics. It is a collection of essays on the moral aspects of capitalism. I want to stress that our primary interest is not politics or economics as such, but man's nature and man's relationship to existence, and that we advocate capitalism because it is the only system geared to the life of a rational being. No politico-economic system in history has ever proved its value so eloquently or has benefited mankind so greatly as capitalism. And none has ever been attacked so savagely, viciously, and blindly. The flood of misinformation, misrepresentation, distortion, and outright falsehood about capitalism is such that the young people of today have no idea and virtually no way of discovering any idea of its actual nature. To obliterate the truth on such a large scale, to hide an open secret from the world, to hide without any power of censorship, yet without any significant sound of protest, the fact that an ideal social system had once been almost within men's reach cannot be done by any conspiracy of evildoers. It cannot be done except with the tacit compliance of those who know better. By their silence, by their evasion of the clash between capitalism and altruism, it is capitalism's alleged champions who are responsible for the fact that capitalism is being destroyed without a hearing, without a trial, without any public knowledge of its principles, its nature, its history, or its moral meaning. The method of capitalism's destruction rests on never letting the world discover what it is that is being destroyed, or never allowing it to be identified within the hearing of the young. The purpose of this book is to identify it. This book is addressed to the young, in years or in spirit, who are not afraid to know and are not ready to give up. What they have to discover, what all the efforts of capitalism's enemies are frantically aimed at hiding, is the fact that capitalism is not merely the quote-unquote practical, but the only moral system in history." End quote. And of course, our August 27 show was entirely devoted to that clash between capitalism and altruism, and to the only way to defend capitalism in an effective way, morally. Both by establishing why and how capitalism is a moral system, and by establishing why all the other isms are immoral systems. I cannot for the life of me understand why any and every public debate and discussion about capitalism doesn't begin with bringing Ayn Rand into the equation, capitalism's greatest and only defender in history. Oh, sure. A lot of economists and other academics have defended capitalism, but basically on the fact that capitalism works, whereas the other systems don't. But why is that? So for me, when it came to the fundamentals, the entire Jubilee debate was moot. That is to say, it was argued on non-essentials and over a myriad of things that do not exist, fictions like public ownership and the common good, and in a vacuum of completely arbitrary definitions that are never agreed upon or sometimes not even offered. Even so, the debate served a purpose, to get those on the left, which anti-capitalists are by definition, to expose their truly delusional views on how they think human beings behave. One thing I should add before beginning is that these one-on-one discussions were extremely time-limited, to the point where even if someone was in the middle of a sentence and the time was up, so was their discussion. So they do come across as a bit rushed and abrupt. In fact, during most of the debates, the students kept talking over at Patrick Bet-David, even as he was speaking, with two voices constantly competing for the same space. But of course, I've edited out our selected clips further down to the essential principles being raised. So get ready for a rude awakening to the demented thinking of the left. And understand that the kind of thinking you're about to hear is not just limited to a handful of naive young students who don't know what they're talking about. Every politician on the left operates on these same principles, which explains the zeitgeist in which we currently find ourselves.
My first claim is incentive is the engine of capitalism. remove it, and the system fails.
Great to meet you, Patrick.
What's your name?
My name's Mason.
Mason, good to meet you.
Yeah. The incentive there is either I die or I work. That's not really a system that rewards merit. That's a system that pushes people into insecure positions. You're totally dismissing the hard work that a lot of these people are putting into for just basic survival. I'd say that mechanics and plumbers and most people working blue-collar jobs that are probably watching this video are working tirelessly day after day.
But yet they still
feel insecure positions to where they don't even know if they're going to be able to afford rent in the next 6 months. So this is not something that we should celebrate as promises of a system that gives you more if you work harder. We should say that this is something that rewards few. Do you think that capitalism is a system of merit that rewards people that
Absolutely.
Are of higher merit?
I do.
Okay, so how would you say that this is a meritocracy when we have some people that are born into excessive wealth and some people that are working minimum wage jobs mm-hmm. to provide for three or four kids? How would you say that that's a meritocratic society?
Those are two different things.
Very unequal things. I'm not saying that capitalism hasn't brought in better things than systems like feudalism or monarchy, but that does not mean that we're at the end of history. Do you think that capitalism is the final solution?
Hi, I'm Alana. It's nice to meet you. Incentive doesn't disappear in a socialist or a communist society. It just changes and evolves. So we see in capitalism, the incentive is obviously monetary gain, maybe even collecting capital itself through land ownership. In a communist or a socialist country, you would see incentive would just evolve into, I know it's a vague term, but the common good. You have an incentive to do your chores around your house because you don't want to live in a filthy house. Right, that makes sense. It doesn't have to be just monetary.
North Korea, South Korea. One is communism mm-hmm. and one is capitalism.
Yes.
North Korea's GDP last year was $23 billion.
Are we judging countries' values based on GDP?
If you lived in North Korea, you wouldn't be able to do what you're doing right now. You wouldn't have a voice. Do you like to be free where you can have a strong opinion? Do you like to be free to have your
dreams? I like to be free, but that's why I'm anti-capitalist.
Well, maybe you are moved to North Korea or Cuba or Venezuela.
Capitalism removes that choice. There is no real incentive of capitalism because the incentive is survival.
When you
get into communism, the incentive is for the common good.
I love that. I got an offer for you before mm-hmm. we move on. If I were to give you your $2,350, which is the cost to renunciate your citizenship, mm-hmm. and I paid you your first class, flight to whatever communist country, mm-hmm. and $20,000 to spend
money, communist country.
Would you give up your citizenship
name
to go to that
country? Country
whichever communist country you want to go to.
Yeah,
Cuba,
then,
we can give you Venezuela,
country.
We give you North Korea, any one of those you want to go to.
My name's Hunter. I'm going to be honest, I've never seen your videos before. Even though there is some real value to free enterprise,
yep.
the profit motive often creates a perverse incentive and worse outcomes in certain situations. For example, healthcare. How much would you pay for a life-saving treatment for yourself or one of your family members?
How much would I pay for it?
Say you have cancer mm-hmm. and you have an 80% survival rate with chemotherapy and less than a 10% without it. How much would you pay? Whatever it takes, right?
Sure.
That's a situation of inelastic demand when the amount that you're willing to pay is not based on the value of the service because your life does not have a finite value. The reason why the medical debt is so high in that is because of the profit motive. If people will pay whatever it takes
to not die,
the profit motive in that case is perverse because healthcare shouldn't be a market in the same way that other things might be a market. It's way different when we're talking about video games or cell phones or TVs or other goods that aren't as necessary as
healthcare
treatments.
To healthcare.
Yes.
I'm Luke.
Luke?
Yes.
Like Luke. The hat. Good to meet you.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to meet you too. So I think incentives are exactly the fundamental problem with capitalism. Is that you say incentives are what make it work, and I think that's the whole issue, is that the primary incentives are either greed, as much personal wealth as you possibly can.
You think that's the problem? It's greed?
Yeah, exactly.
Not greedy at all.
And like you said, survival.
Yeah.
Right? So the person, working five jobs, that they're doing that because they wouldn't want to do that if they didn't need to survive. But that's such a horrible dystopian world to live in. If someone has to work five jobs just to survive. See, we want to create
a world
which people don't have to earn their right to
live. We live in a country where majority of the world wants to come here.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the inalienable rights. We shouldn't have to earn those rights. We shouldn't have to earn the right to health care.
To earn
the right. No. We just want to live, exist. We can't work our blood, sweat, and tears just to survive. That's a horrible dystopian world that we live in right now.
Then what do you think we're here for? To just sit around and play video games? What's your name?
Zena.
Zena.
The incentive is intrinsic motivation.
Intrinsic motivation?
Of course. Have you ever heard of intrinsic motivation?
Of course I have. So you think people are going to go just do anything for no incentives?
The incentive is intrinsic, meaning passion, interest, and honing your skills.
Whether you get paid or not.
Well, the problem is that we're forcing people to, you know, need to, you know, work to survive.
So what's the alternative? So give me another solution, another economical system.
May I finish the talking point?
Yeah, actually, I'm curious.
So yeah, the psychological theory of self-determination is widely accepted in psychology. It basically explains that intrinsic motivation and passion is actually what predicts incentive. You're arguing that incentive is integral to profit-driven motivation. That's not true. Extrinsic motivation, all times, at every single case, is going to, you know, predict less creativity, less motivation, less skill, etc. Intrinsic motivation is what causes things like technological development. Some of the greatest breakthroughs have been from people who are devoted in honing their skill.
So should they get paid for it?
I think that we shouldn't live in a system that privately owns the means of production and forces people into this position.
What college did you go to?
USC.
You went to USC. What did you major in?
Sociology.
My next claim is capitalism has lifted more people out of poverty than any other system. Gabby?
Yeah,
good
nice
to meet you.
So I would argue that governments have actually lifted the most people out of poverty. If you look historically, we look at China, for instance, had the most significant poverty reduction in all of human history. They pulled 800 million people out of poverty using state-owned enterprises and state centralized planning. They did work with the capitalist system, but they did it, most of it was done through state-funded infrastructure, education, and contributing to strong literacy programs, distributing the wealth. I think that my other argument would be that there hasn't been an opportunity for alternative systems like socialism to pull enough people out of poverty. So we look at examples. There hasn't been enough opportunities for them to succeed. And so when
Why
we
do you
say,
think that is?
I think that is because, partly because of the US, and I think because capitalist forces and global market insecurities have sabotaged these attempts to do socialism. And this is the problem that I have with so many capitalists, is they can't exit their worldview and try to see a world where socialism could be in place, because they don't understand the untapped potential of socialism. I think we need to work with the government. I don't think that we should abandon the state. I also don't think that we should give state elites the complete control over society. I do think that we should work with the state to instill these reforms and then eventually erode capitalism.
But unfortunately, socialism has had hundreds of years
to
produce results, and it hasn't worked. Do you know why it doesn't work, though?
It's been sabotaged.
It's been sabotaged, yes. Or it's because it forces people to do something they don't want to do?
Does capitalism not do the same?
No, capitalism gives
There's
you
7
the,
million people in this country who have to work
choose.
Multiple jobs just to get
I
by.
I have to work multiple jobs
They're
for a season.
Forced to do that because either they do that or they starve. So if the options are to work or to starve, that's not freedom, that's economic coercion.
I'm Anne.
Anne, good to meet you.
Nice to meet you. The bottom quintile of the United States doesn't have any wealth. In fact, they're in debt, so they have literally like negative wealth.
Why do you think that is?
I think that's for a lot of reasons. I think that's because workers have been exploited. I think that they haven't had the opportunity to gain social mobility.
Why do you think that is?
Because of exploitation.
You think they're being exploited?
Yes.
Oh, so people are being forced to work at companies. They don't have a choice.
I didn't say that they were
forced. So people
are being forced if the other option is starve or die.
Grace?
Yes, Grace.
Good to meet
Hi.
You.
I want to say that I think it's pretty comical that an elite such as yourself has the gall to tell us average Americans who's in poverty and who's not. A lot of times,
I was an average American.
You're not
I was
anymore.
A guy that was in poverty.
You're not anymore.
And you can also change.
Very,
you can also change.
I've noticed that you like to skirt from America and talk about other countries to try to make it look like we're better, but we're
America's
actually
the greatest
worse.
Country in the world.
Anyways, it's the greatest country.
We are at
the highest that we've ever been with homelessness. You think that capitalism's winning? Can you survive? Would you like to live off $7.25 an hour?
I used to work for $4.25 at Haagen-Dazs.
Right.
Then
and
I
that was
worked
a very
at
different time.
Burger King for $4.75.
And how much do you make now?
Then I make millions today. Then
right,
I worked
and that's
at
why
Bob's
you like
Big
capitalism,
Boy.
Because we're not
no,
all
but,
making
but
that.
The, but
and
the
that's
difference
my point.
Is, but
a
the difference
millionaire is
between,
critiquing the people in poverty
no, the
and
difference,
saying,
my
you should
hope,
work harder. You should work, you know, you
hope,
can be me.
My
we can't all be you.
My hope is that you believe you can change and improve, that you believe you can upgrade yourself. That's my
it's
belief.
It's very, you know what, that's what rich people like you want to keep telling
yeah.
us.
But
you can be just like me. Do you want to
yeah.
be like me? If you work hard enough,
I'm not
you can
saying
be
that.
Like me.
I don't,
it's not
I don't,
very realistic.
It's actually you wouldn't be able to be like me because
you're
you wouldn't
talking
work
down
that hard.
To people like
Would
us.
You work that hard?
I don't have to answer that.
If you don't choose to
measure my, like, I don't have to measure my work ethic to be worthy.
You don't have to. Then you can't be upset for others who do so. You
can't be upset for people who are struggling.
No, because they work harder than you.
And that's what's wrong with capitalism. Because you think that
homelessness.
You have to work so hard. You're
sitting here blaming a person who's changed their lives for the better, and it's their fault. My dad
this
was.
This is not the United States
dad,
of Patrick Bud David.
Do you know
this
where?
This is the United States of America.
I know, and I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to be here.
And you say that, but are you willing to pay more taxes
I am
so that other
so
people don't suffer? Are you willing to pay more taxes
so other
people don't suffer?
I am so grateful to be here.
I see you're skirting the question.
My dad.
You're not willing.
Are you willing to take one recommendation?
No.
You're not.
Not for me.
Then I can't help you.
That's okay. I don't need your help. I didn't come here for your help.
You've
I came
been
here
flagged
to debate
out.
You. Good.
Awesome.
Harmon.
Harmon?
Yep, Harmon Crowe. I don't know if you know this, it's a little history lesson. In 1900, King Leopold II of Belgium determined that the entire land of the Democratic Republic of the Congo was his personal property. And within 10 years, capitalists came out. They exploited all the land, extracted trillions of dollars of resources. 15 million Congolese died. For reference, the Holocaust killed 6 million people. And the most famous picture from that time in history is a rubber worker staring at the disembodied hands of his 8-year-old daughter because he didn't hit his rubber quota. I'm willing to bet that man worked harder to hit that rubber quota than anything you've ever worked for in your entire life. And I think when you say this is the best system that's ever been created, to me, that's the result. That's what happens when there's no rules.
Wow. I don't even know where to begin, but by restating what was in the Ayn Rand passage I read earlier about the flood of misinformation, misrepresentation, distortion, and outright falsehood about capitalism is such that the young people of today have no idea of its actual nature. Boy, was that ever demonstrated. First, we have Mason, who says, either I die or I work. That's not a system that rewards merit. That's a system that pushes people into an insecure position. Well, Mason, either you die or you work is not a system of any kind. It's a fact of life and survival. And guess what? It applies to every other person on the planet as well. When Mason says he shouldn't have to work to live, he's advocating the slavery of someone else who will have to work to produce what Mason wants. And how can it be a meritocracy when some are born into excessive wealth, asks Mason, as if that would change anything? When someone is born, as an infant, they have no wealth. They are completely dependent upon their parents. When they're old enough to earn their own way, they too have to operate on a meritocracy. And by the way, what the hell is excessive wealth? There's no such thing if it was earned by the person who possesses it. Excessive wealth is the term that socialist criminals use to justify their theft and redistribution of that wealth, which is why socialism is a wealth-destroying system that always leads to poverty. And then you have Alana who says, I like to be free, and that's why I'm an anti-capitalist. Oh my God. You know what she means? This is what all lefties mean. What they mean is free from responsibility and obligation, which is the opposite of freedom. And then she says there's no incentive in capitalism because the incentive is survival. I don't know about you, but what I want to hear them explain is how has survival itself no longer become an incentive, especially given its alternative? I mean, I can't think of a more powerful incentive. And with her delusion that communism is about the common good, which is undefinable no matter how you twist that term, she was not able to name a single communist country and declared that Cuba and North Korea are not communist. But those who laughed at her over this claim did not seem to understand that in her deluded mind, communism doesn't have dictators.
What is the definition of communism to you?
Stateless, moneyless, classless society.
And you prefer that?
Yeah, so I think that we should be moving towards, you know...
Communism.
Yeah, stateless, moneyless, classless society.
Dictator telling
Dictators
me what dreams should
be. Dictators would not
be
allowed under communism.
You're saying communism is not dictatorship?
No.
And just who's going to stop or prevent that dictator from rising? That's what I want to know. As to believing in a stateless, moneyless, classless society, capitalism already is a classless society, since all are free and able to move up and down within each quote-unquote class, which is so defined by economic status. These are not static class structures as can be found in non-capitalist nations. And for somebody so greedy for other people's money, how hypocritical to call for a moneyless society. Money merely facilitates trade. Is she advocating primitive barter? And as to her stateless advocacy, well, I'll leave that one to be addressed by Tim Pool later in the show. And then there's a fellow named Hunter, who suffers from inelastic thinking about healthcare. He thinks healthcare shouldn't be a market. But the provision of products and services for healthcare is a market, whether he likes it or not. What Hunter doesn't say is that he means a free market, free from the coercive power of the state. Does he know why Canadians have to wait for months and years to even get a doctor, let alone get treated? It's because there is no market in Canada. He should move to Canada, which is already the socialist utopia he envisages when it comes to healthcare. And then there's Luke, who says, "It's such a horrible dystopian world to live in if someone has to work just to survive. We want to create a world in which people don't have to earn their right to exist and live." My goodness, this is immaturity and laziness on steroids, to say nothing of being completely detached from reality. What is the matter with these people? Zena, who believes in intrinsic motives, "We're forcing people who need to work to survive." Wow. What I want to know is, who is the we that is forcing people to work to survive? And if no one will work to survive, just how does she expect to survive? It's obvious what her intrinsic motives are, to live at the expense of others. Then there's Gabby, who thinks that government cures poverty. There's not enough opportunity for socialism to succeed because capitalist forces and global market insecurities have sabotaged socialism. Yeah, she makes it sound as if capitalist forces are some kind of military operation. Capitalism prohibits the use of force in trade and economics and is based on mutual consent and cooperation. Socialism is based on the initiation of state force against the productive people within its jurisdiction. What communists and socialists call redistributing the wealth would be called theft and robbery in any other context. Capitalism forces people to survive. That's not freedom, that's economic coercion, she says. Well, to be able to say something like this takes a special kind of stupid. Coercion does not occur in nature. Coercion is a human-to-human application of force or of its threat. Even a person alone on an island will find themselves in a situation where they are quote-unquote forced to survive. Nobody else is around. That's not force. That is necessity. And then there's Anne, again, who says she's forced to survive. The bottom quintile has no wealth because of exploitation. They have no option. They are forced to work, so it's starve or die. Talk about a common theme. Another greedy, selfish parasite. I wouldn't offer her the privilege of exploitation with that attitude. Starving or dying are the only consequences of her irrationality. And then there's Grace. My goodness. This woman was utterly graceless, exhibiting her overt envy and hatred towards Patrick Bet-David. I don't know how he put up with it. And he displayed a lot more grace himself than I would have. And then, in a pure statement of contradiction and hypocrisy combined, she accuses Patrick of, "You like to say America is great, but we have the highest homelessness today," in one statement, and then declares, "This is not the United States of Patrick Bet-David, this is the United States of America." Well, you can't have your America and eat it too, you graceless hypocrite. And then there's Armin. In 1900, King Leopold of Belgium determined that the entire land of the Democratic Republic of the Congo was his personal property. Okay, so in Armin's bizarre mind, a king declaring his rule over a complete country is capitalism. That's capitalism to him. But no, that's communism. And just because so-called capitalists exploited the king's land does not mean that capitalism has no rules. Under capitalism, the government is a referee, not a player in the game, which is the case described by Armin. So do not confuse capitalists with capitalism. And at this point, the train wreck continues with more from the Jubilee debate on this side of the upcoming bumper, followed on the return side by TimCast's Tim Pool with some of his reactions to the anti-capitalists.
My next claim is, if all the money in the world were divided equally, it would return to the same pockets within 5 years. Caleb?
Yeah. Okay, so you're just now claiming that people who don't have wealth don't know how to manage it. And that's fair because a lot of them have never had it before. So what do we do to basically ensure that people like myself who are currently, thank you to the United States, thank you to the state of California for giving me medical insurance to get blood work, for giving me food stamps so I can have food. I've applied to I don't know how many hundreds of jobs. I can show you the receipts. I can show you the email confirmations. Like, I am trying my best to use my values with the freedom that we have.
So if I give you a job, you would work 40 hours a week?
If the job is in alignment with something that's noble and good, I think I could.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm in a position where I have options, like you said. I do have some options, but they seem to be somewhat destructive and exploitative of me, of my peers. So I'm trying to
discriminate. I think you're too selective for jobs right now. You don't have the ability to be selective at this stage.
Well, but the thing is, I do because I'm instilled with a freedom that is maybe God, universe given, and I don't actually have to because of the system, like you said. I don't have to play along with some corrupt game. So I gave up.
I think California is perfect for someone like you.
Well, thankfully, yeah, California agrees.
James.
Where exactly am I failing when I am working 80 hours a week, I am taking the only jobs that will hire me, I have put in 477 applications over the last 2.5 years, not even gotten a call back once.
Why do you think?
You tell me. You're a job creator.
But I don't know your resume. You know your life better than I do. Why do you think you have not gotten a call back on 477?
Because I do not have a degree, because I could not afford one.
Okay.
I live in an area where the physical job market mm-hmm. is very limiting. Like in the town that I grew up in, for instance, there are 8 jobs, mm-hmm. period.
Does your family live there, mom, dad, everybody's in that same city?
Everybody was at one point.
Okay.
Most of them are dead now.
Okay, sorry to hear.
Nah, it is what it is. It's poverty. You know, we're kind of used to that on this side.
Why do you feel like you're a victim? Why do you feel like you're a victim? Why do you feel like the way you speak, like, you know, you're the victim where all this happened to you?
Because I exist.
Why do you think you're somebody that's got into a situation because it's not fair what happened to me? How about we do this? How about I interview you and I give you a job? Would you move to Fort Lauderdale?
Ooh, man, that's Florida. Sure, why not?
Would you move to Fort Lauderdale?
Sure, why not?
How about you and I document this? After this, you come, I do an interview with you and I give you a job. And let's see what you do 90 days later. And I paid you a reasonable wage.
Are we talking a livable wage or a reasonable wage?
What do
and
you make
whose
right
version
now?
Of reasonable are we
what
talking
you
about?
Right
your
now?
Version of reasonable or my version of
but
reasonable?
But you see, so now for me, what I'm noticing from you is...
Is I need specifics?
No, not necessarily. No, most of the people I hired need specifics.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is I'm trying to hire them. In this instance, you're trying to get a job and you're being selective. It's going to work against you.
I mean, I'm not trying to get a job. Originally, I was trying to ask you where the moral fell.
My offer's off the table because you're going to be difficult to work with.
Okay, sure. But my question was, where is my moral failing?
Hi.
What's your name?
I'm Faye.
Faye?
Yeah.
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you. So how would you define socialism? Because I think you're kind of misunderstanding what anti-capitalist ideals look like. I think we are just trying to advocate for basic rights for our people in this country and across the world, of course. But I don't think it's necessarily about equal wealth disparity around the world for most people that are anti-capitalist. I think it's more about just standard rights that are provided by the government.
Standard rights that are provided by the government?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Did you vote for in 2024?
In 24, I voted for the socialist candidate.
Who was that?
Claudia de la Cruz, I believe.
Who did you vote for in 2020?
I was actually not able to vote. I was in a hospital.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yes, because of results of capitalism.
Tell me more.
Yeah, so I didn't have access to proper health care or even access to a proper job that would sustain me as a disabled person. I'm also mentally ill, so that was something I had to deal with. But I'm mainly mentally ill because I am disabled in a capitalist country.
Have you been able to go to different doctors and get yourself tested?
Yeah.
You have?
Yes.
And in California?
Yes, but not enough.
I
can't find a specialist.
You can't find a specialist?
I can't find a specialist.
Is there anyone in your life that's willing to pay for a specialist?
Well, they could if they had
anybody
money, but
would you be okay if I pay for a specialist for you to go see?
Yeah.
Would you take money from a capitalist to help you go see specialist?
I mean, yeah, sure, why not?
I'm going to have you go see two, do you live in California?
Yeah.
I'm going to have you go see two specialists, but would you also be open to seeing somebody else I choose as a psychologist that may...
No.
You're not.
No.
So you simply,
you choose as a psychologist, you're would, choosing who gets to determine
no,
what my mental
what
health
I,
looks
what
like?
I, what
no.
I,
no.
Okay, then I wish you nothing but the best. Seth, good to meet you.
I think your claim kind of doesn't make any sense because it would not inherently be a capitalist society you're describing. Because I'm surprised nobody's really addressed this issue. We haven't even defined what socialism is. Capitalism is a system in which all businesses are funded by millionaires and billionaires, investor classes. If this society, everybody had the same amount of money, I don't really know how the money would be generated up and down. I don't know in this theoretical. It sounds more like an anarchist society. It wouldn't go back to the same thing or places because I don't think that we have an inherent equal starting point in the beginning.
Yeah, but this is a starting point. What I'm saying to you is if we write that study,
it wouldn't go to the same places because we have never even tested some sort of free market. We've never seen any sort of system akin to that. A genuine free market, not one that's distorted by capitalists, by business owners. Capitalists generally protect their own class.
Patrick Bet-David wasn't surrounded by 20 anti-capitalists. He was surrounded by 20 people who don't know how to read, and that's me being nice. They're unhinged and unwell.
I worked for scarcity. I think there's levels to it. You have the survival folks who work for survival to pay their bills. Some work for status, some work for freedom, and some work for legacy. The folks that work 3 or 5 jobs, you know, to pay their bills and do what they're doing, if the incentive wasn't there, they wouldn't work 3 to 5 jobs. Some of the guys that build a bigger business that solve a lot of problems.
The incentive there is either I die or I work. That's not really a system that rewards merit. That's a system that pushes people into insecure positions.
Don't care. Stop. I'm not holding your hand. Poverty is a requirement for the system. Nobody wants to admit it because it makes people feel bad and nobody wants to be stressed out. When he says, if I don't work, I die. Welcome to the world and existence. How about I drop you in the middle of the woods or North Sentinel Island and say, figure it out. Do you think in that circumstance, you'll sit back and survive by not working? No, you'll work 100 times harder than you've ever worked in your life and you will hate it. Modern society and capitalism have continually improved it as we chase the dragon of trying to live better lives. However, my friends, when we get to that point where everybody has abundance, we're actually there. And what do you get? A generation that can't find food, that doesn't want to work. They say, I shouldn't have to. And when you don't, the machine breaks. Poverty is a requirement of the system. That's a fact. People don't want to tell you this. The liberals don't want to tell you this. They're going to clip this out of context and lie about what I think, but it's the truth. I'll give you an example. You need somebody to lay bricks, right? Okay, who's going to do that? A rich guy? Never going to happen. He's going to say, no way. I'm much smarter and can plan big systems that people need and create a system that will generate more wealth and access for the average person. It will improve the lives of those impoverished. A poor person today has better dental care than Rockefeller did 100 years ago. But poverty will always exist. There's going to be somebody who doesn't have the skills or the capabilities, but they're going to lay bricks.
This thought experiment, again, right. If we're going to give it...
This thought experiment. PBD says, if all of the wealth of the world was divided equally within 5 years, it would return to the same pockets. He is correct.
Serious?
Right.
Look, I want to understand, how would you propose that happen?
I hope you realize this is just a question we're asking everybody, right? But if you take all the wealth, which is around five...
How do you propose a hypothetical magic scenario that no one is intending to actually be literal?
$100 trillion, okay, give or take. You divide it by 8 billion people.
Okay.
It would be around $62,500 each. Within 5 years, the people that don't know how to handle money themselves, they would lose it all.
And within 100 trillion divided by 8 billion is 12,500.
5 years, the same wealthy would get the same amount of money.
As someone who certainly doesn't make that much money, I'm willing to take that as a gamble just for fun.
Right,
I'll be honest. But at the same time, like, okay, so you're just now claiming that people who don't have wealth don't know how to manage it.
Indeed.
And that's fair because a lot of them have never had it before. So what do we do to basically ensure that people like myself who are currently, thank you to the United States, thank you to the state of California for giving me medical insurance to get blood work, for giving me food stamps so I can have food. I've applied to, I don't know how.
There's a limit. As I already mentioned, a society that accumulates too much net negative will eventually collapse. I'm sorry, that's just true.
Do you think that capitalism is a system of merit that rewards people that are higher merit?
I do.
Okay, so how would you say that this is a meritocracy when we have some people that are born into excessive wealth and some people that are working minimum wage jobs to provide for 3 or 4 kids?
He's not, I understand his point. There are people who are born wealthy, will never do real work in their lives, and I know some of these people, and boy, are they dumb. And cry more about it. Capitalism still, at its root, just basically means we're talking about private transfer of goods. That I, as an individual, decide for myself. Anti-capitalist, you're saying that some structure should decide for you what you can trade. Not interested. I get to decide.
But we're talking about systems. Capitalism is a system. It's not an individual testimony.
But it's a system that you get to use in your advantage. It's a system that's produced the best results than any other economical system. There's not an economical system that's produced better results than this.
I'm not saying that capitalism hasn't brought in better things than systems like feudalism or monarchy, but that does not mean that we're at the end of history. Do you think that capitalism is the final solution?
You know what I said on Twitter? I said PBD isn't surrounded by 20 anti-capitalists. The title is wrong. It's 20 retards. These people don't know what capitalism means. They've not even read Marx. They just heard someone say, the system we live in today is capitalist. It's bad. Therefore, what are you even debating? Here's the issue. First, let's address stateless. The reason why I'm not an anarchist, lean libertarian a little bit, is that I believe state is a requirement. Oh, libertarians and anarchists whinging and screaming at me. You need dispute resolution, and there needs to be a Supreme Court. The American system is the best we've come up with so far. Perhaps there's better systems, I don't know, but for the time being, how do you resolve disputes? And I've never been given a real answer by those who believe in a stateless society. It's funny that she's a communist and she's, you know, not a tanky, left communist. Let me put it like this. I can make it simple for you. Lady, that water I need for my family. I have been here longer than you, and there is but one small creek on this property that I will protect so my family doesn't die. You've come, and you've begun to use my water for your purposes, which has strained the aquifer. Stop or else. There's no state. What's your resolution? Ma'am, what's your resolution? Well, people will all just be really good to each other, and by being really good to each other, they'll just recognize that, no, that's not going to happen. I will not let you take drinking water from my child. I will put up a fence. I will protect myself from you or anyone to make sure my family gets what they need. And I ain't talking about building a skyscraper. I ain't talking about a flying car or an infinity pool. I'm saying, ma'am, as a poor person who has grown but a humble crop and has water to grow those crops and protect my and provide drinking water for my family, you can't take it. That's my private property. Cashless, classless, and stateless. So what do I do when you say, I'll die without the water, and you take it anyway? Here's your stateless society. I have an honest question. Tell me what you think, libertarians, anarchists, and, you know, whatever she is. Because I'll tell you this. If there was no state, and there were no classes or cash, that means I'm on my farm, I have built my fences and my barricades. I have armed myself to the teeth. And if you threaten the survival of my family, I will do whatever I must to stop you. Pipe dream, psychopathic garbage from greedy, lazy individuals who don't want to work. And if you do not run on that treadmill, you will die. And I'll be damned if I will run for you.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And that was well expressed. And while I fully understand the point that Tim was trying to make by saying that poverty is a requirement for the system, the word requirement is completely inappropriate. Capitalism inherited poverty. It did not create it. What Tim is implying is that some people will always have more or less than other people, and that's a fact. And as to this last selection of anti-capitalists, there was Caleb, who says people who don't have wealth don't know how to manage it because they never had it before. And what do we do about people like myself who can't get a job, he asks. And he has it backwards. People who don't know how to manage wealth are the ones who didn't have to earn it. Wealth is managed by earning and creating it, not merely by possessing it. As to what we, quote-unquote, should do about people like him who can't get a job, the answer is nothing. Since when do we owe him anything? The question to ask is, what is Caleb going to do about not being able to get a job? Did you notice how he dragged the rest of the world's unemployed into his personal dilemma? And then there's James. after saying that he cannot get a job following over 477 applications without a single response, and after Patrick Bet-David offered him a job, James has the nerve to say, "I'm not trying to get a job," and then asks, "Where is my moral failing?" James, your moral failing is in the fact that you are an anti-capitalist, opposed to the only moral system in history, in the words of Ayn Rand. And then there's Faye, who says she was in hospital because of capitalism, and she has no access to a job, and that she's mentally ill because she's disabled in a capitalist country. Talk about a non sequitur. But isn't it interesting that the self-declared mentally ill and determined to remain so should be anti-capitalist and pro-socialist and communist? And then there's Seth. This poor fellow thinks that capitalism is a system where all businesses are funded by millionaires and billionaires and investor classes, which of course is not correct. Any society economically free from coercion is operating under capitalism, even if it has zero millionaires and billionaires. But eventually it might have them, if left free. And then Seth actually makes a valid observation in a given context when he observed that we don't have a genuine free market. It's distorted by capitalists who defend their own class. Here again, I must warn everyone that capitalists exist under all economic systems, including communism and socialism. And yes, many capitalists are arch enemies of capitalism. These are the ones who cozy up to government to distort the market by being given special privileges and monopolies and subsidies and the like in order to defeat and prevent open competition in the marketplace. Erroneously referred to as crony capitalism, this relationship between business and government is more accurately referred to as fascism, or at least it should be called crony socialism. Up next on this side of the bumper, Patrick Bet-David and his PDB panelists offer some of their reactions to the Jubilee debate a few days after the event, while on the return side, Matt Walsh, in an argument we hear so often from the religious righteous, offers his religiously wrong definition of rights.
Let's talk about some of these wonderful people on Jubilee. Showed the girl with mental illness. Is that the one?
Yes, sir.
Because she actually reacted as well. So
did she?
She did. She afterwards reacted as well. We'll play the clip. I mean, she posted it up there, so you have to see it.
I'm also mentally ill, so that was something I had to deal with. But I'm mainly mentally ill because I am disabled in a capitalist country.
Tell me more about mentally ill. Who qualified you as somebody that's mentally ill?
Me and my doctor team.
Who convinced you that you're mentally ill?
Me and my doctor team.
What's the specific category of mental illness? Is there one? You know why I asked this question? Let me explain to why I asked
this
question.
So I don't even like the psychological industry. I don't really stand for like Sigmund Freudian politics or anything like that. I don't have access to even a result or a solution to my disability as someone with a connective tissue disorder. It's genetic.
Have you been able to go to different doctors and get yourself tested?
Yeah.
You have?
Yes.
And in California?
Yes, but not enough.
I
can't find a specialist.
You can't find a specialist?
I can't find a specialist for who I am.
Is there anyone in your life that's willing to pay for a specialist?
Well, they could they would if they had money.
Would you be okay if I pay for a specialist for you to go see?
Yeah.
Would you take money from a capitalist to help you go see a specialist?
I mean, yeah, sure, why not?
I'm going to have you go see two. Do you live in California?
Yeah.
I'm going to have you go see two specialists. But would you also be open to seeing somebody else I choose as a psychologist that may...
No. You choose
so
as
quick.
A psychologist. Choosing who gets to determine what my mental health looks like.
Okay, then I wish you nothing but the best. Okay, so here's a reaction. Let me show you a reaction.
So many things to say.
Here's a reaction.
Okay.
I was kind of scared of the Jubilee.
She looks better now.
And then I realized that the only people are... The only people who are criticizing me are capitalists, so it makes it really easy to laugh at them. Their only gotcha for me is that I'm disabled and mentally ill. Good one, guys. And I have a septum piercing.
She's definitely mentally ill. I'm going to go out there on a limb and say that she's actually mentally ill.
I agree with you.
I feel for her.
Can I make one point?
Yeah.
If these kids are for communism, what makes them think they get to pick their own medical experts? Has anybody been to Canada?
Here's another one, by the way. This one, I offered her to renunciate her citizenship, and she wasn't too happy about it. Go ahead.
I like to be free, but that's why I'm anti-capitalist.
Well, maybe you are.
That is why I'm anti-capitalist, because capitalism removes that choice. There is no real incentive of capitalism, because the incentive is survival.
When you get
into communism, the incentive is for the common good.
I love that. I got an offer for you before we move on. If I were to give you your $2,350, which is the cost to renunciate your citizenship, and I paid you your first class, you know, flight to whatever communist country, and $20,000 of spending money,
communist country.
Would you give up your citizenship
name
to go to that
country?
Country
and
whichever communist country you want to go to. Cuba, we can give you Venezuela, we give you North Korea, any one of those you want to go to. Choose any one of them, I'll give you a one-way ticket and I'll fund it for you if you want to.
I like to be.
She couldn't name a communist country. Oops. Okay, so I'll give you the list. Go. That's so funny.
Oops.
Here's my impression of what happened during Jubilee. You have someone named Patrick Bet-David who had a 1.8 GPA, father worked in a 99-cent store, came from Tehran, Iran, and yet still is optimistic about the future. Then you have all these kids who were born in California who are arguing in a pessimistic standpoint of, and it just sounds like this: I believe in you, you can do this. No, life's not fair. No, I know life's not fair, but pull yourselves up, you can do this. Stop telling me what to think, stop telling me what to feel. At some point, these people are lost. If you want to understand why California is broken, look no further. To me, the one that stood out, there was this tall, 6'4", good looking white kid who played victim. It's like, how are you playing the victim, guy? You're a good-looking, tall, white kid in America. Like, and at some point, not even this kid. This kid wouldn't take a job if his life depended on it. But they just have this overall victim mentality that is unshakable, no matter what you say. So you can try to help them, but they won't help themselves.
Julia.
Okay, well, I think you've got a convergence of two cultural problems. The first one is, we are infantilizing citizens, period. Everybody is a victim. And I've seen this for a while, whether you're overweight, whether you're a person of color, whether you're a young person, everybody's a victim. And they love the narrative at first because you don't have to take any agency. But I absolutely think this is by design, and I have for a while, because when you make somebody a victim, you fundamentally disempower them to make a change. So you're incapacitating our citizens, right? At the same time, you do, and we have to give a little credit to this fact. It is harder for kids today. Inflation is insane. It's outpacing the amount that they're making. They can't afford a house. They can't afford to have kids. It seems like democracy can be bought. And it isn't just these kids who seem a little crazy on this Jubilee. There's a YouGov poll that we actually covered on Her Take, and I can't remember the percentage. I think it was like 20%, Rob, of young kids today are favorable towards communism, not democratic socialism. Yeah. It was communism. So why?
It was the fact that it's all victimhood, victimhood. I think a lot of times people want an out because the out gives them freedom. When building a business in the last 25 years, when I ran an insurance company, it was so easy for people to quit, to create a video and trash us because this is hard.
Yeah.
It was easy to use God as an excuse and say, well, I'm just, you know, God is more important to me than you, and I can't give a Bible study and this and this and that. I'm like, okay, that's the lamest excuse. They would hide behind their wife. They would hide behind their husbands. They would hide behind their kids. Anything to not work. Anything to avoid doing the actual work and making it like it was somebody else's fault. That out is liberating. The out is liberating. Why I wasn't able to succeed. But you don't understand. You know, I'm mentally ill because the capitalism system. Who convinced you of that?
During a hearing, Senator Kaine got into a brief debate about the concept of rights. And this subject came up because this was a nomination hearing for Riley Barnes, who has been nominated to serve as Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor. And during his opening remarks, Barnes made mention of the fact that human rights, which are now part of his job title apparently, come to us from our Creator, from God. Tim Kaine took exception to that idea, and here's what he said.
The notion that rights don't come from laws and don't come from the government, but come from the creator, that's what the Iranian government believes. It's a theocratic regime that bases its rule on Shia law and targets Sunnis, Baha'is, Jews, Christians, and other religious minorities. And they do it because they believe that they understand what natural rights are from their creator. So the statement that our rights do not come from our laws or our governments is extremely troubling.
Extremely troubling, says Tim Kaine. He's troubled by the idea that our rights come from God, our creator. He says that this is what the Iranian regime believes. Yes, the idea that our rights come from the creator is literally the core foundational principle that our nation was built on. Our entire system of government, the country itself, rests fundamentally on the idea that our rights come from God. Because Tim Kaine was right about one thing. Rights are a religious and theological concept. They are a spiritual doctrine. They have no meaning outside of that framework. A godless worldview can't account for rights. Rights, in that case, are just whatever the guy in power says they are. There's no higher power or inherent right to appeal to. So whenever somebody talks about rights, they're making a religious claim, whether they know it or not. This is what makes most of our political debates in this country so pointless and fruitless. Most of the people running around, or many of them, crying about their rights, have never once actually considered what a right even is. We have an entire political party that rejects the existence of God, but still claims the rights that originate from him. And rights can only originate from him. The government can, should, recognize and protect these rights, but they do not create the rights. The government is supposed to be a steward of our rights, not their author. Now, and by the way, saying that, oh, well, rights are in human nature, they're not from God. Like, you can't get around it that way either. Because how did the right, what do you mean rights are part of human nature? If you take God out of the equation, and we are all just Darwinian products of Darwinian evolution, there's no right. What the hell do you mean? In a godless Darwinian view of the world, there are no rights at all. The only right is just do what you can to survive. You're talking now in a spiritual realm. This is a spiritual concept, which requires a realm of spirits, does it not?
No, it does not. That sounds as delusional as anything the anti-capitalists were saying. We live in the real world, not in a spiritual supernatural realm, and rights are only definable and relevant to reality. That's the material world. Again, here's how the religious rightists always weaken the justification for capitalism and individual rights, and why they avoid philosophers like Ayn Rand, who is able to define rights in a rational way based on the realities of life. Quote, "The concept of a right pertains only to action, specifically to freedom of action. It means freedom from physical compulsion, coercion, or interference by other men. A right is a moral principle defining and sanctioning a man's freedom of action in a social context. There is only one fundamental right. All others are corollaries. A man's right to his own life. Life is a process of self-sustaining and self-generated action. The right to life means the freedom to take all the actions required by the nature of a rational being for the fulfillment and enjoyment of his own life. The right to life is the source of all rights, and the right to property is their only implementation. Without property rights, no other rights are possible. Bear in mind that the right to property is a right to action. Like all the others, it is not the right to an object, but to the action of producing or earning that object. Individual rights are the means of subordinating society to moral law." End quote. By defining capitalism in objectively accurate terms, we not only discover the nature of capitalism, but also the nature of anti-capitalists. We could say so much more about these sad anti-capitalists, but we've been saying most of it already for the past several decades, and we'll continue to do so when you join us again next week as we transverse our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. night. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
All right, Lafferty. Is this what I'm paying you for?
Oh, no, sir. I'm doing this for nothing.